Thanks for listening to the Rising Coaches podcast. This is Adam Gordon. And first of all, I'm sorry it's been so long since our last episode, but we are excited to be back. We got a great one today. Trey Meyer from Furman Men's Basketball joins us. So looking forward to jumping into that conversation. But before we get started, I have to take a second to talk about what we did at the Final Four just a few weeks ago in San Antonio. Unbelievable event. This is our ninth year of Rising Coaches. It's crazy. And we've been having our conferences every summer and our events at the Final Four. This year's event was a little different. We had speakers for the first time, and we brought back some former attendees, guys who had been there at the first conference. And listen to this. Andy Birdsong, who's the GM of the Austin Spurs and player personnel for the San Antonio Spurs, was an attendee. He was a video intern at Florida State 9 years ago, just getting started at our conference. He came back to speak to our group, was joined by Will Hardy, another great addition to our event. He's an assistant coach with the Spurs. And then Marlon Stewart, who's now at Hawaii, Mitch Reeves at Cal Poly, and Brian Eskelton at Harvard. All first-year attendees at Rising Coaches 9 years ago. Now they come back, they're speakers. Unbelievable what these guys have done and the legacy that they have created for our group, Rising Coaches, and what they're doing for themselves and their careers. So really proud of them and excited and grateful that they've come back and continue to give back to Rising Coaches. We've got our conference coming up in August in Indianapolis. We'll release details for that shortly. But for now, let's jump right into our conversation with Trey Meyer from Furman. Trey, thanks for being on the show, man.
You're welcome. Anytime. Glad to be here.
So you guys, Trey Meyer, Furman Paladins. Did I say that right?
You did.
What is a paladin, well, by the way?
Paladin is a knight in shining armor.
Okay. Suits you well. So the Paladins, you guys go 23-10 this year. I don't know much about Furman, but I assume it's not an easy job. But you guys have done an unbelievable job winning and maintaining success the last few years, from started with Nico and now Bob Ritchie carrying it on. And before we unpack what you guys have been able to do there at Furman, Trey, tell me about the transition and taking the job there this summer, the position you took, and just how everything unfolded.
Well, I think, you know, like most young guys out there, was searching for a job and was really struggling to find, you know, the assistant coaching spot on the road that I was looking for. And just happened to develop a relationship with Bob Ritchie probably 5 or 6 years ago on the road out at a recruiting event, and got to know him a little bit. And he gets promoted to the head coaching spot at Furman. And I had stayed in touch with him. And immediately I wanted to, you know, try to get on the road with him. And I just really couldn't get in there, is what I felt like. I couldn't. But he ended up calling me back and asking me if I'd take the op spot, which initially I wasn't crazy about because I'd been on the road at Miami, Ohio.
So you were at Miami for 5 years as an assistant coach?
Yes. Yep, I was at Miami for 5 years as an assistant coach.
And you guys got let go after five seasons, and so you're looking for a job, obviously trying to stay on the road. And go ahead, I'm sorry.
No, you're absolutely right. So there, 5 years, get let go, tough deal. So trying to land back on my feet. You know, obviously when you're on the road for 5 years and then you're trying to find your next spot, you know, it's hard to accept that you're going to have to go down. But, you know, so Bob ends up calling me and offering the op spot to me. So, you know, I thought about it for a few days and had a couple other things going on. But, you know, Furman's 15 minutes down the road from where my wife grew up and where her family is. And it's 2.5 hours from where my family was. So, you know, having been away from my family for 8 years and having her away from her family as well, you know, for 5 years, we thought that, you know, let's give this a shot. You know, I knew Bob. I knew that they had had a great amount of success. They had just been coming off a 23-win year, which was a school record. And we obviously tied that school record this year again. But, you know, I ended up taking that, even though I wasn't crazy about the spot, but I knew the person, and I knew where it was. So, you know, I figured, hey, you know, last time I got moved up to be an assistant coach, I started in the ops role. So heck, let's try to do it again, you know?
And when did you take the job? And then when were you promoted from ops to assistant?
So I took the job, I want to say late April, but I didn't report until late May. So I had a month. They were transitioning staffs, and there were some people here before me that had to finish up their contracts here. So I got down here late May, and about, I would say, 3 to 4 weeks into the job, Jay McCauley takes a job at Wofford as the associate head coach. So I'm sitting there, you know, like, oh my gosh, like, how did this just happen? And, you know, before it happened, when I came down here, I told Bob specifically, and we had this conversation on, you know, what happens if somebody gets moved up. And, you know, I did not come to Furman thinking or knowing that if that happened, like, I had the job 100%. My thing with Bob was always, you know, obviously I want to be an assistant. I want to get back on the road as soon as possible, but, you know, I've got to come down there and do a really good job and fit with what they've got going on. And then if that's the case, then yeah, you know, maybe I should be moved up. But there was no, you know, agreement prior to that. So it was 3 or 4 weeks into the job, and then he gets the Wofford deal. And then, you know, Bob kind of goes through a process of going through some candidates, talking to some people. And then in the meantime, you know, talking with me on multiple occasions. And then, you know, a few weeks later, it just happened.
What was your mindset? So you must have had a good 3-4 weeks as director of operations. Obviously, he felt comfortable with you and, you know, how you fit into the culture there. But what was your mindset? You know, obviously, you wanted to go from assistant to another assistant job. You took the ops job at Furman because of the success that they had had and the location. But what was your mindset of how to attack that position?
You mean once it came open or just prior to that?
No, attacking the operations position. You know, obviously it's not the position you had wanted, but how were you going to attack it?
Well, I was fortunate enough to have already gone through that experience before. And like the first time I got moved up when I was with John Cooper at Miami, Ohio, I got moved up simply because I did a really good job at the current job I had. So when I came into Furman, I knew I needed to get in. I needed to connect with the players. I need to figure out how this place works. I need to, you know, learn Bob a little bit. Obviously, he's a first year head coach. I'd worked for a first year head coach before when Coop got the Tennessee State job, so I had experience with that. So my whole mindset was just to establish myself as a worker and, you know, just try to develop relationships from the get go. And fortunately, that's ultimately what got me moved up, in my opinion, was just my relationship with the players in that short span, my relationship with the staff. And then I had to come in and run camps, you know, almost immediately when I got here. And I think, you know, being organized, you know, that kind of bleeds over into camps. And, you know, how you deal with people is very, you know, you can see that, you know, when people are interacting with campers, parents, whoever it may be. So I just think all those things, you know, are what helped me get the job. But I think my mindset, you know, from an overall standpoint was just, you know, just try to do the best job you can at what you got. Even though you've been on the road, you got to come back and do some things you really don't want to. But I've always thought that my path would be different than somebody that, you know, if they were a star player at Kentucky or whoever it may be. You know, I don't have this big time pedigree. So sometimes I have to take positions that maybe people don't want to take in order to get some things that, you know, that I would like to do, which obviously was being on the road again.
And this wasn't the first time you've been in this situation. When you were with Coach Cooper, who, by the way, is the best.
The absolute best. Absolute best.
So when you were with him, he had an opening. You were director of operations, and he had an opening on his staff. Was this at Tennessee State? And you did not get the call up from the bullpen.
Correct. First time I didn't get the call. But yeah, this was my third year at Tennessee State. He had an opening. Dana Ford, who's now the head coach at Missouri State, left to go to Wichita State. And same deal, you know, they talked to me a little bit. They pretty much laid it out there what was going to happen. And Coach Cooper was very fortunate to be able to bring, you know, bring a guy who was his mentor and a guy that he played for in Rick Ducket and bring him on as the associate head coach. And Coop was just so honest throughout the entire deal. And I thankfully, you know, I was humble enough to recognize that, hey, you know, we got a chance to bring Coach Ducket on staff. Like, you know, this is great for our program, great for our team, and great for, frankly, our careers, you know.
So there was no hanging your head. And because I remember when this happened, and obviously you wanted to get moved up, but you really took it really well, which is a testament to you and who you are. But obviously, did it help having gone through that experience once before?
It did. Yeah, it did. It did. You know, I think the one thing my father taught me, and he always told me he's a Parks and Rec director, but, you know, he would say, Trey, you know, sometimes I interview people, we go through the process, and I don't end up hiring that person until like the second or third go around. So, you know, you got to do the best you can the first time through, and you got to understand that you may not get it the first time, but you're still the impression you leave in that first time is going to set you up for whether it's the second time or the third time. So, you know, you can't get discouraged, because rarely do I hire somebody the first time through on the first interview. So that always kind of stuck with me when I went through that. And it helped me. And I just remembered that as I went through it.
This is great. You brought up Coach Ducket. Give me your favorite. And Coach Ducket is hilarious, right?
Very, very hilarious. One of the funniest guys on the face of this earth.
So give me your favorite Coach Ducket phrase, because he's known for always having a phrase for everything.
You know, there's so many, and if I had a list, there were probably one on there that I like better than this one I'm about to say. But one of his go-to ones would be, boy, you don't know piss from Pepsi. You know, and that was one of my favorite ones, but I'm sure there's many, many more that I'll never forget. But
what is the what's the operation successful patient dead? What is that one?
Yeah, that's another one. Operation successful patient dead. So, I mean, he just got.
What is that? What does that even mean?
Well, you know, it's like if you run a play really well and you execute it well and you don't make the shot at the end, well, you still, you know, the patient's still dead. You know,
that's great.
that's what I always thought it meant. But heck, it may not mean that. You know, that guy's got so much wisdom. I mean, I probably wasn't even on the same level as him half the time when he's saying some of those things. But what a great teacher, what a mentor for me. I mean, working with Coach Ducket was a blessing. It really was.
So Coach Ducket was a head coach. Obviously, you worked for Coach Cooper, head coach.
Yep.
And Bob Ritchie now. And now Dana Ford is a head coach, was at Tennessee State, and now Missouri State. Compare
Correct.
Those four guys for me. Is there a common characteristic that all of them shared? What kind of sets up? Because it's hard to get a head coaching job, and you've been fortunate to be around four different ones.
Yeah, I mean, that is a very, very tough question. I mean, I guess I can start with – I'll start with Dana, because he was an assistant at Tennessee State when I was a GA. The thing I always knew about Dana was that he could connect with people instantly. You know, he's got great charisma. He's really, really sharp. And, you know, he can just hop up and talk to a stranger and, you know, it'd just be the best conversation in the world. I mean, he just got that it factor. Always thought that about him, and always knew, you know, with his sharpness, and obviously that charisma carried over into all the recruiting success he's had at Tennessee State, Wichita State, Illinois State. I mean, you know, that's been a major part of why he's been so successful. You know, Coop, probably, you know, this is probably going to be a common thing with all four of them, is just their ability to connect with people, their personality. Coop has got one of the most engaging personalities of anybody I know. I mean, just a great guy to work for, extremely sharp, bright, organized. You know, and the same thing with Coach Ducket and then Coach Ritchie. I mean, Coach Ritchie here is just, I mean, he's as bright of a mind as I've ever been around. I mean, he always thinks outside of the box. He's always looking for the next idea. He's constantly trying to adapt. You know, we're never doing the same thing all the time. You know, he doesn't believe in doing it just one way. He's creative. And his ability to connect with people is phenomenal also. You know, he's had a lot of success recruiting at the other schools he's been at Charleston Southern and then here at Furman. So I would say all of their abilities to connect with people pretty much instantly is why, you know, they were probably head coaches and successful head coaches.
This is good. So talking about Coach Richey, and apologies to Paladin Nation if I'm off on this, but I got to imagine this is a program that hasn't had a ton of success over the years until recently, and until Nico took over and now Coach Richey. What has been the key to their success? How have they been able to turn Furman into really a powerhouse in the SoCon?
Well, you're right. You know, I'm a South Carolina native, and growing up in the state of South Carolina, I never thought, growing all the way up, going through high school, playing ball and everything, you never thought Furman basketball. Like, that was never something you're like, oh man, you know, Furman basketball. You never thought that until, obviously, you know, recent. And I think for me, the second I walked here on campus, I saw our team in the weight room immediately. And the first thing that I could tell was, wow, they're working really hard. They're really energetic. There's obviously a culture here. And I think that's probably where it starts. I mean, the word culture gets thrown around all the time nowadays. But here, you know, I could sense this togetherness. I could sense the energy. And I think that goes back to, it goes back to recruiting, you know, because the type of people you recruit obviously create what kind of environment culture you have to a certain degree, you know. Now there's other facets, like we got a phenomenal strength coach here. We got a phenomenal staff. They obviously did a great job getting in the gym and working with the guys and spending a lot of time with them and developing deep relationships with them. But I think the most immediate thing is just, you know, the culture that's here. You know, I think that's why we're so successful. You know, I mean, even this year, I mean, we have a group of guys that work, they work together, and they care about each other. And, you know, when you have something and you build a program and those are the foundations, I mean, you've got a solid foundation that you can build upon. And then when you have that, and then you start to add guys in that can shoot the basketball, they're skilled, they can pass, then it's just everything just continues to grow. And I think that's what's happened here.
What is it you mentioned recruiting and culture. What is it you guys have done on the recruiting trail that kind of separates yourselves from everybody else? Is there something in particular you guys look for? Do you have a certain formula? What are you guys doing there?
Well, I think, first of all, I think we're extremely picky. You know, I think we know exactly what we're looking for. And
which is what?
You know, Well, I'll start with this. We use the word alignment a lot. So it starts with where you're at, and does the person align with where you're at? So Furman is a high academic school. So if we go get a kid, people have tried to do in the past here, you just go to a gym, you see a guy and he's a great player, and you say, you know what, we're going to offer that guy and we're going to bring him here. Well, if we bring him here to Furman and he can't handle the academic load, it's going to bleed over into other things. It's going to bleed over into basketball, and it's just not going to work. It's not, those two things don't align. So it starts with knowing who we are and who we need to get, which is finding somebody, obviously, that is serious about academics. I know this sounds like I'm recruiting you right now, but I'm not, but because they have to be able to handle that academic load. But if we find a guy that's good enough academically, that meets the requirements academically, then we move on to who they are as a person. You know, what kind of work ethic do they have? How much do they love the game of the basketball? You know, those things are hard to judge in recruiting. Because, you know, we all know high school coaches, yeah, he's a hard worker, yeah, he does this. Well, we have to, you know, you go visit with them, spend time, talk with them, learn as much as you can about them, and try to figure out what kind of work ethic they have and you know, how much they love the game. And then I think when you move on from there, obviously, you know, talent is a given. We all know there's got to be talent there. But if you've got those other things and you've got the talent, then you've got to fit, you know, for Furman, and I'm sure that would fit most anywhere, but especially here. You know, if we find a guy that aligns academically, he works his tail off, and, you know, he shoots it really well, but he's not a great athlete, but he can pass, you know, we're willing to give up one of those things if that kid is aligned with what we're doing. If we find a kid that can do those things on the court, but he's not aligned from a personal standpoint or an academic standpoint, then that kid is not going to achieve as much as the other kid, because eventually that stuff's going to bleed over and it's going to affect it. Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely. And then you guys do a lot with film, right?
We do. We do. This is the one thing here at Furman that I and the other places I worked at, we haven't done as much as we do here at Furman. We're big on high school film. So what we try to do is once we find a kid, he's got the grades, you know, we've talked to the coach, there's some things about him. We try to get their three best high school games against good competition from whatever season they're in. And so then we'll get those and we'll cut those up into different categories. And then we have an evaluation system. And then we all, not just whether it's me or another assistant and Coach Ritchie, like we all, entire staff goes down, video everybody. We sit in the room and we go through all their clips. And then we go through our grading system and then we grade them, you know. And then Wow. We go through stats. And then we'll pull up the stats for that year, you know, what he shoot percentage-wise. And we go through all of it. And we try to make a grade off of what we have on the film, because, you know, I think we're all guilty of putting more stock in AAU than high school. And, you know, really when you think about it, high school basketball, depending on the competition, and, you know, if they're a small school and the competition is just really bad, then it can be skewed. But, you know, if they play against decent competition, you know, a lot of times who they are in high school is probably going to shine more than who they were in AAU, you know, or going to show more when they get to college.
You know, absolutely. I agree with you. Is that something that you will take with you if, you know, when you're a head coach one day, are you going to have your staff, you know, lean on film heavily like you guys do there?
Absolutely. I mean, I would 100% do it. You know, having doing it now, I wish I would have done it the last 8 years. I wish I would have done it more and paid attention to it more, because, you know, I know in the past making mistakes of going and watching, you know, you see a kid have a few good games, you get all hyped up, and, you know, that's just not a true representation of who he was through the course of an entire season of being coached by a high school coach in a system, you know, in a different, you know, style of play, which we all know high school and AAU is a lot different because AAU is more transition oriented than high school. So I wish I would have done that, and I absolutely will do that for the rest of my coaching career.
So when you guys sit there in this meeting room as a staff and you pick apart all these different aspects of each recruit's game, this has got to be just your top guys, right? Because this sounds time consuming.
No, it's not our top guys. That's why we have our video guy cut them up. So the time consuming part really is the cut up, you know, but that's, you know, that's part of his job.
So how long will it take you to get through one player's clips as a staff?
One player's clips? You know, less than 5 minutes, Adam. Less than 5 minutes. I mean, we're going boom, 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 boom. And sometimes, you know, if you see a really good guy and we've gone through, and let's say we've done three games and the dude's scoring like 30 a game, well, you know, you may not need to watch, however, I guess that's 90 points, you know, however many clips that is. You know, once we've gone through all the twos, all the threes, you know, it goes by pretty quick.
Okay.
It's a lot quicker than you would think.
So it's not like you guys are pausing it, having a group discussion. I mean, you're watching the clips.
No, it's straight through it.
Okay.
You know, straight through the categories.
And you know what else I love about that is it sounds like you create, you know, a culture of this recruit is all of ours. You know, it belongs to the whole staff, and it's not, because you know how some staffs get into, well, this guy's my recruit, that guy's your recruit. You know, a lot of programs, they don't even watch each other's guys. And it sounds like you're really creating a culture amongst the staff when you guys do it that way.
Yeah, absolutely. Because I may be the guy doing all the legwork, talking and getting the film in and doing all that stuff. But once it's to the table, I mean, everybody's eyes are on this guy, and then everybody has to give a grade. You know, I can't sit there and be biased. Like if I'm selfish and I'm biased, I'm like, oh, this dude, I give him the highest grade just because no. Then you're getting called out, you know, because that's not right. You know what I mean? Like, everybody's like honest opinion is on the table, honest grade based solely off the film, you know? So it's good. It brings great discussion. I think it helps each one of us as evaluators, because sometimes you miss something and then they see something. You're like, you know what? That guy's right. You know?
Trey, this is great stuff. And I want to talk more about recruiting, but first I'm going to pause and try something I've never done before. Are you ready?
I'm ready.
I'm going to try to do a commercial live while I have you on the line. Okay?
Sounds great.
We use something at SEMO called Just Play Solutions for our scattering reports, right, Trey? So
yes.
I'm sure you have something similar. Every program in the country has something for their scattering reports. But Just Play allows you to do everything that all these other programs allow you to do. They have live stats that update every day after every game. You plug in the personnel, you write your key points, right? This sounds pretty normal, like every program. But here's the kicker with it and why I love it so much. And what we did here at SEMO is the players download the app, and I'm able to put the entire clips, all of the clips, all the personnel clips onto the app, and they can watch it on their cell phone. So we go through personnel with our team for 5 minutes the day before the game, and that really is all we had shown them in the past. Well, now they have the ability to go on their phone that night. They can watch it at their own time, at their own pace. I can track it. I can see who's logging in, who's watching it. And get this, Trey, one step further, I can throw in a quiz. I could let them watch their clips, pause it, and I can have a question pop up saying, how do we close out to this guy? And it's got multiple choice, red light, green light, yellow light, whatever your terminology is, Steph Curry, Rajon Rondo, LeBron, you know, whatever. And they got to answer that multiple choice question, and then it'll tell them if they got the right answer, and then the video continues. So it's so much more interactive. It has so many different options, and it's got stuff that we haven't even gotten into yet at SEMO. But the best part, it's even cheaper than the competition, Trey. It's unbelievable. You guys got to try it at Furman. How did I do, Trey? Was that good?
You did excellent. Okay. Did excellent.
Okay, good. All right, back to recruiting. So you guys clearly have a style of play at Furman. I mean, you guys have done it with great kids and all of that, but you guys are skilled. You guys can really, really shoot the ball, correct?
Correct. We averaged over 10 made threes a game this season. So we had games where we hit 15, 16. So it was a really, really big part of why we were successful.
Okay. So that leads me to my question, and this is a Trey Meyer question. I don't want the Furman basketball answer. Do you like recruiting to a specific system, or are you trying to get the best players you possibly can and cater to what they do best?
That's a very, very tough question.
And hold on, before you answer it, let's put this precursor out there. You're not at Duke or at a Kentucky where you can pick the best of the best. You're at a harder job, you know, where maybe you can't get your first option every single time.
Right. Well, you know, I would say I would like to recruit more to a system, but, you know, the system I like is obviously what we do here at Furman, which a big part of it is shooting the basketball. You know, we really want five guys on the floor that can shoot. And, you know, in most cases, sometimes we only have four, but I mean, if you can't shoot, like, and you're at a bad job and you got guys that can't shoot, I mean, you're going to struggle to score, you know? So I would say probably more towards the system. But that system with shooting the basketball is really going to lead towards better players, you know?
Well, you know, like you know how it is,
like,
though.
Some danced around it a little bit, but
yeah, you danced around it, Trey. You sure did. No, I'm just kidding. But you know how it is. Sometimes you go on a recruiting trail and you see a four man who's just out there dominating, and he's getting rebounds and dunking it and you know, quick spinning on the baseline and just giving people the business. But can they shoot threes? No, not really. It's not what they do best.
Right.
Or you see a point guard.
So that's exactly why I would rather go for a system, because in a system you can't do that. You know, like I keep coming back to what we do here at Furman, but what we do here at Furman is going to shape who I am as a coach for the rest of my life, because, you know, we stick to what we're looking for. You know, if it's a four man, he can't shoot, well, he's either got to be a five man or he can't play for us. You know, it's just that simple. And I think that brings clarity. You know, I think it makes things easier, you know, because when you're out there trying to squeeze guys and do this, I mean, you're really just kind of taking away from who you want to be when you do that, you know?
No, I completely agree with you. But at the same time, I like having a little flexibility to be able to take a guy. And obviously, I know you would too, if you got a guy that's a true difference maker, would take him, right?
Well, it depends on, like, if you're going to change your offensive system on a year-to-year basis. Like, we're not doing that, you know? Like, we're not doing that. So, for us, if he's a four-man that can't shoot, then, I mean, he's got to be, like, Dennis Rodman on the glass. He's got to be one of the best cutters we've ever had. Like, he's got to be so elite in some other area that we can justify it, you know? Because if he can't shoot and he's not elite at, you know, rebounding or cutting, then all he's really going to do is pack our paint, you know? People are going to be able to help off of him.
Right, right.
And we scored 80 points a game this year. So, you know, why do we need some guy to do that if we're already scoring 80 with how we do it, you know?
Mm-hmm. No, we're both Clemson guys. Obviously, we worked together for Oliver Purnell. And I thought what he did there – now, I don't know. Do you think that would work today? Obviously, Oliver Purnell, this is in – the mid-2000s, so like 2008, I think, is when my first year there. But, mm-hmm. you know, Clemson is not one of the better jobs in the ACC. In fact, it's if you had to rank those jobs, it's probably right there at the bottom. And he kind of differentiated himself by the press. You know, they pressed the whole time. So they didn't have to get five-star guys. They had to get five-star athletes and five-star length. And they were able to win a lot of games, go to three straight tournaments with that style of play. Do you think you can still do that the way the game is today?
Well, number one, obviously, you know, from working for Oliver Purnell, for me to sit here and say that, you know, Oliver Purnell's way would not work, I don't think anybody would be in the right mind would say that. But I think from a general standpoint of just pressing, sheer pressing like that, I feel like the game's gotten away from where that would work, you know, because now – and you can remember when they just started having face-up fours, and now you've got five, you know, the Warriors. It just completely changed the entire game. You know, now everybody's got to be able to shoot. Everybody's got to be able to handle it. Everybody's got to be able to pass. I think the skill level is just kind of at an all-time high from all five positions, you know. So I just don't see how that would work with how good, you know, the offenses are these days, and especially with how – you know, they've tried to change the way they officiate the game and call it a little bit tighter. You know, they got the cylinder stuff. I just don't see how that would work, you know, over the course of time, you know, unless you just used it spare to come back at the end of the game. But I don't think it could be a full 40-minute deal in this day and age anymore. I don't.
I think you can still get into people and make them uncomfortable and force them into doing you can do things that they don't like doing. Yeah. But don't you agree that
the press for – go ahead.
Don't you agree that having that system that he was able to recruit to is what made that job better than what it really was?
Oh, I mean, it was just a phenomenal idea. I mean, I'll never forget it. You know, they said really Coach Purnell's deal was like, we can't get the guys as skilled as Duke in North Carolina, but we can get athletes that are athletic as those guys at Duke or North Carolina. And then we're going to play a style that exposes that athleticism, and hopefully that's going to shrink the gap. And then, you know, Coach Purnell starts winning, and then all of a sudden starts getting those guys that are a little bit, you know, closer in the skill range. And all of a sudden you got a team that goes to the NCAA tournament 4 years in a row.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. And then even Coach Brownell's done it now at Clemson as well with, you know, if you look at the way they've recruited the last 4 years, they had their best team since he's been there this year, and I think four of their starters were transfers. Really smart with what they did is taking really, really good players who are on their second school.
Absolutely. You know, Coach Purnell had his niche, and obviously Coach Brownell and them have found their niche, you know, with getting guys because, you know, it's just so hard, you know, to go beat the Blue Bloods for guys you need. And then, you know, they just have found a different way of doing it through transfers. And Coach Brownell's always been known for development, so they're obviously getting really, really good players, and they get them, and they just develop the heck out of them for a year, and then all of a sudden, you know, they're ready to go. And what they've done there has just been awesome. You know, being a Clemson alum, you know, couldn't be prouder of what they're doing there. And I think they're going to be a heck of a ball team next year, too. I can't wait to watch them.
Yeah, me too. Okay, but we're talking about the ACC, so let's bring it down to earth a little bit. And maybe I'm a JUCO guy. I spent a couple of years at JUCO, so I don't know. But do you think, like, if you took a JUCO job tomorrow, Trey, that maybe isn't the best job in your league, could you get a bunch of high IQ dudes, maybe majority qualifiers, maybe not, I don't know, but just high basketball IQ guys that could really shoot and run some sort of confusing, you know, Princeton offense, or it doesn't have to be Princeton, but something where there's movement, player movement, and there's a lot of shooters and space on the floor, and then do a couple different zones defensively and have success like at that, at the JUCO level?
Well, as a former JUCO guy, I really hope I don't offend you by my answer. But I don't think you can do that, because I don't think high academic kids, like, there's got to be a reason for them to go to a junior college. And if they're high academic and they really, really value education at the top of their priorities, then they're not going to go there. You know?
Well, what if they didn't get the offers they wanted to? Or they don't have to be high academic. They just have to be high basketball IQ.
Right. Those guys go Division II and Division III, in my opinion. But I'm sure you could get – there are guys out there that are high academic that aspire to go Division I and do go that route. I just don't know that you could have a full team of those guys, you know. I think you could probably sprinkle in a few here and there, but I don't know that you could build your team around that every year, you know.
Yeah, I don't know. It's something I've been toying with. Maybe you do it a few years, now you got a culture of that, and if you're a qualifier.
I think you do have, you know, you would have to have a niche. I just don't know if that would be it, you know. The way I'm at now after being here, I mean, even if I got a JUCO job tomorrow, I would probably go get as many shooters as I could, and I'd probably play small. You know, that's probably what I would do. And spread the floor,
mm-hmm.
and just try to shoot as many threes as possible, because that's what kids want to do anyways. They want to shoot threes,
right?
You know, so that's probably what I would do. But I don't know. I don't see you being able to get a full roster of that. But I don't know. Maybe you know about an area I don't know about where kids would be interested in doing that.
What else do you want to talk about, Trey?
I don't know. We touched on recruiting. Touched on Furman, my background. I don't know. How much time do we need to fill?
We don't have to fill any time. Just wanted to know if you wanted to take it anywhere that we haven't taken it yet.
Nothing comes to mind. Nothing comes to mind.
All right, Rockets or Warriors this summer in the playoffs? Both teams are healthy.
You know, I'm going to go with the Rockets. Don't really have a great reason why, other than I want the Warriors to lose. But I just think it's phenomenal what's happened with James Harden and how D'Antoni's got that job, and they've morphed him into a point guard after being, you know, such a shot heavy guy. Not that he's not shot heavy anymore, but just, you know, changing his position and what they've done there with the three ball, and obviously having a guy like Capella down low. I just think they're going to upset them and get it done. And maybe that's just because I want them to. But based off what I've watched NBA-wise, I just think I think that's the way it's headed. How about you?
Man, I think it's going to go to 7. Obviously, I think it's going to be a really good series. I can't bet against the Warriors just yet. If they're healthy, you know, that's the big wild card, which they've been beat up. But they got so many weapons. They got so many weapons. And they, you know, they still have Kevin Durant, who's 6'11", doing the same things that some of those other guys are doing. So I'd go them.
Absolutely. Yep. No, I can see that for sure.
Yeah. Do you guys show a lot of film to your team, either like of yourselves or of other teams? Like, what do you guys show them, and how long do you spend in the film room?
You know, during the season, we show film almost every day, some sort of film. And we show them all different kinds of things. You know, one day it could be something Coach Richie saw, you know, maybe a motivational type video. One day it could be Villanova playing off 2 feet. You know, one day it could be, you know, Wichita State guarding in the half court. I mean, we show them all different kinds of things. And we think it's good to show them. You know, we've shown them some NBA stuff. We think it's good to show us, you know, to a certain amount, and then to show other teams also that they can relate with and want to see. You know, Coach is big on not you know, just having the same routine, being monotonous, and guys kind of getting bored. So we're constantly changing it up and showing different teams. And I think they really like that.
Is practice like that too? Are you guys constantly mixing up what you guys do in practice?
Yeah, we do a lot of different things. You know, we actually got in a routine to the later part of the year where, you know, we would have individuals during the day. So, you know, I coach the post players, so I would have each one of my guys for a 30-minute segment during the day, and then we'd go practice for 4 or 5 minutes and be done. And that was something we kind of gravitated to towards the end of the season, and our guys loved it. So we're always looking for different things and trying different things. I mean, earlier in the season, we went to like just a straight 90-minute practice, put 90 on the clock so they knew exactly how much time they had and everything, and we just went hard for 90. So, you know, he's always about changing, adapting, and, you know,
I like that.
Mixing it up a little bit.
Yeah, because the season's so long and it's such a grind.
Yeah, it is. You know, when you come in there and do the same old stuff, everybody just kind of goes through the motions, just gets stale, you know.
And it seems like every team goes through that little slump at some point during the season where they lose 2-3 in a row or 3 or 4. Did you guys hit that, or were you guys able to avoid that by keeping it fresh?
No, we're just like everybody else. We hit the rut or the dog days or whatever you call it. And we, you know, for us with how we play, we weren't shooting the ball well. So we said, okay, you know, let's do these individuals. Let's get, you know, players like the one-on-one attention. You know, they get a lot of shots. So we did that 30 minutes, and then we did the 45-minute team segment. And I don't know what it was, but we started shooting the ball a little bit better. You know, confidence rose, and guys got more shots up, and they felt ready to play, and we just kind of stuck with it. But we did have, you know, we did have a period where we were struggling a little bit, and that's kind of when we went to the individual, then team practice thing.
So, all right, going back to Oliver Purnell, he was a big motivational guy and always had a different theme for every game and different symbolism and imagery to keep guys fresh and motivated. All right, can you tell us about the match tactic that you used at Miami when you guys were struggling and just needed a spark?
Yeah, I'm impressed that you remember that.
Of course.
So the one thing that was really, really cool about Coop was if you had the scout, you were in charge of the pregame speech right before the team walked out. So he would speak to them earlier on, you know, I don't know, 30 minutes on the clock. And then when they came in that last couple of minutes before they went out, you had that. So that was, I mean, if you'd never done it before, which I hadn't, you know, it was pretty nerve wracking, you know, uncomfortable. I don't consider myself a great public speaker. So it was very nerve wracking. So anyways, so that game we were playing at Bowling Green. And, you know, we were kind of going through a rut and, you know, just, I was listening to a song or something and, you know, it was just talking about spark and what a spark can do. And so I started researching a little bit and I read about a humongous fire out in California. And I'm just thinking, man, you know, this enormous fire that spread for acres and acres and acres started from a spark. Now, why can't this be our spark? So I got a pair of matches that night, and I talked about the fire out in California and how much land it covered and the damage and the whole deal. And then I had the managers cut out the lights, and it was pitch black in there. And then I lit a match with a spark, and I told them that this represents where that started. And you knew about all the damage that it did, and that tonight was our chance to make a spark. And then once we get the spark, you know, there's no telling what kind of damage we can do if we get going. So that's kind of what it was.
That's awesome. Did you guys win?
We did.
Let's go.
We did. Yeah, that was probably one of my favorite pregame deals. I had one other that was I'll never forget for the rest of my life, and it was actually against Bowling Green also. I think it was the following year.
You saved all your good stuff for Bowling Green.
Yeah, I know. I don't know what it was about BG. Probably, that was one of the teams obviously I had a scout for, but you know, the deal that night was we needed to do the little things to win. We've all been there. You know, we're trying to get the guys 50-50 balls, charges, all that stuff. So I gave them the whole spiel about all the little things we had to do and the little things would make big things happen, yada, yada, yada. So I concluded it with, I said, you know, guys, when you see a ball rolling on the floor tonight, and I had a manager at the back of the locker room, and he rolls a ball out in the middle where we're speaking. There's a concrete floor, and I got my suit on. I said, you got to dive on it, and he rolls it. And so I dive full out on the cement floor and dive for the loose ball. And, of course, the guys go nuts. And they pick me up and all that stuff. But I'll never forget that. That was probably my favorite one of all time. I couldn't help but say that when you brought the thing up.
That's great. Well, my favorite when we were at Clemson, OP's theme for that game was chipping away. You know, so he didn't want the team worrying about the big picture and this, you know, just wanted to chip away just like an axe chopping wood. You know, you chip away one swing at a time. So, and this is his theme for our game versus NC State at the ACC tournament. So I was the GA at the time. I don't know if you remember this or not, but he came to me the day of the game before. And, you know, ACC, I think it was in the Georgia Dome. And when you go into these big-time tournaments, you got to go through the metal detector and their security, and they check everybody in and give you the wristband, and then you can go to the locker room. So Coach Purnell grabbed me the day of the game. He's like, Adam, I need you to go to Lowe's, and I need you to get an axe. And I want a big axe. I want a real, like, good-looking axe, and I want you to bring it and have it ready in the locker room. And that's all he told me. He didn't tell me the chipping away theme or anything. I just knew I was instructed to get an axe. I wasn't going to ask questions. So I'm going through the security line with a giant axe in the duffel bag, inching closer and closer to the security guard, and they get the, you know, the bomb-sniffing dogs and cops there armed. And I get up there and, hey, before you guys search the bag, just want to let you know very calmly, you will find an axe in here. It's purely motivational, but I just want to give you a heads up. So that did not work that night. That's awesome. I think we lost, but my favorite. Well, anyways, Trey.
Yeah, it's a great idea.
Yeah, it's good stuff. Trey, appreciate it, man. Excited to see. I'm sure you guys are going to have another great year next year. Keep the 23. Can we get over the hump? Can we get more than 23 wins for once at Furman? What are you guys doing over there? 24 next year?
I think we can. We're working hard right now to try to get there. So okay, we'll good. See, man. But that's the plan.
We'll be looking.
I really appreciate you having me on.
Yeah, man. We'll be looking forward to 24 plus wins next year at Furman. Trey, thanks again.
Absolutely. Thanks, Adam.
All right, we're done. How did that go?